What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to It's Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action, seeing your city's budget through a Strongtowns lens. You've likely read a Strongtowns story describing how the current development pattern that dominates North America leaves communities with long-term maintenance obligations they can't cover. It's a story we see in communities across North America, where we favor growth on the edge of town over maintaining existing neighborhoods. These stories help us understand how communities dig themselves into a deeper hole with each new big infrastructure project, including your own community. But, as Strongtowns advocates, how do we respond? How do we advocate for a better approach? And most important, how do we change the narrative in our own communities? These are the types of questions this episode's guest, Strongtowns member Cindy Long, asked the Strongtowns Facebook group following a discouraging council meeting. And the insights she received from the group, from best practices to hard data, will shift how you address the consequences from the development pattern in your own community. In this episode, Cindy shares that her city found itself considering to close a public library to help fund a new indoor sports stadium, and how she and her peers pitched a vision of financial resiliency to her council people, including how she observed her city's financial situation, how she asked the hard questions, and what a Strongtowns approach would look like in her community. Enjoy. Hey there, Cindy. How are you today?
Hi, Jacob. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. How's life in Thunder Bay, Ontario?
Oh, it's finally starting to warm up a little. It's been a cold one, and it's great to see some melting happening.
Nice. I'm happy to hear it. Well, Cindy, so excited to be chatting with you today. We have a great action to discuss together, and that is seeing your city's budget through a Strongtowns lens. And this conversation was inspired by a post that you shared with the Strongtowns Facebook group, sharing some reflections that you had from a council meeting that you had attended. I know the city was talking about their budget, and you know there were some certain items brought up that I know were very telling to you and gave you a good perspective about, you know, the current state of the financial situation in Thunder Bay. It was a great conversation. Really excited to dive more into it today because I think it's really going to be telling for other listeners who, you know, have maybe read the Strongtowns posts. They understand that, you know, if we have more expenses than revenue, that we're going to be in a tricky situation, but maybe haven't really understood it in their own city or had someone actually on the ground, as you have, explained their own perspective. So really excited to chat with you today. I would love to start off by just learning more about you, Cindy. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what got you into Strongtowns?
Okay, well, I was originally interested in Strongtowns because of a presentation that Chuck Marone did in Thunder Bay a few years ago. And I think he was invited here by our active transportation coordinator at the time. I was listening to the presentation, and what really struck me was the emphasis on developing downtown core areas, because those are the areas that give you the best bang for your buck in terms of return on investment because of taxes and the value of the property tax in that area of a city. And I'm listening to the presentation and thinking about our own city and thinking, this is a really powerful idea, because like so many cities, the downtown core is really suffering in Thunder Bay. And we don't have just one downtown core. We have two.
Wow.
Which puts us in, that puts us in a really strange situation with two downtown cores to think about and maintain, because Thunder Bay, just a quick historical note, it used to be two separate cities, Fort William and Port Arthur, and it amalgamated into the city of Thunder Bay, I believe 1970, if I've got the date right. And that left us with two cities with a big gap between them and these two downtown core areas. So that has certainly put us in a bit of a unique position. So that got me into strong towns, but I've always been interested in urban planning and urban development. I read A Pattern Language. I don't know how many listeners would be familiar with that book, but there's a series of books, The Timeless Way of Building, A Pattern Language. And everything in it resonated with what I understood about cities, having grown up in Toronto and having lived in several other cities, not just Thunder Bay. And the strong towns message only seemed to reinforce that.
Nice. So that book that you mentioned, Cindy, is that Christopher Alexander? Am I getting that?
Yes, it is. Yes, I think you are. I think you are.
Well, listeners, if you're interested in that title, I'll make sure to include a link in the show notes to check it out. Like you, Cindy, I've heard a lot of people talk about this book, and I've also just really compared it to the Strong Towns movement, set a good relationship between the two. So, listener, if you want to dig into that, I will include that in the show notes below. So, Cindy, let's talk about this council meeting that you attended that inspired this Facebook group. What was going down in Thunder Bay?
Well, it was kind of the other way around. I had thought I was already on the Strong Towns Facebook group because I was seeing their posts, but I think I was just seeing posts others were making. I wasn't actually in it. So I went to the Strong Towns Facebook group and I joined it. And one thing I did was I took a little quiz. I think there were like 10 questions. To see how healthy your city is, how strong your community is.
Oh, and yes, the Strong Town Strength Test. Yes,
the Strong Town Strength Test, right. So we failed it. And like, badly, like just about every question I'm going, no. I thought, oh my gosh. So the first thing I did when, and at the same time I was doing that, some articles were appearing in the local media about the budget deliberations. And of all things, the councillors, some of them were talking about shutting down a library branch at the most extreme, and at the least extreme, cutting the library's budget. And I just looked at that and I thought, wait a minute. This is a city that is proposing to build a $30 million indoor sports facility, and it has to close library branches. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with building an indoor sports facility. It would be great. There's a lot of good reasons to do it. The city could really use one. But if the downtown core areas are full of boarded up storefronts and seniors are selling their homes because they can't afford their taxes, and we have the second highest property tax rate in the province, and we still can't get the sidewalks plowed, and we're talking about closing libraries or cutting their budgets, then something is wrong. So that made me really want to speak to the city during the budget deliberations. At the same time, I joined the Strong Towns Facebook group, and that was actually my very first post in the group. I just said, help, my city's failing.
Yeah.
What can we do? The city's in budget deliberations. Same old story. We don't want to raise taxes. We're thinking about cutting services. Anybody have suggestions? And boom, it just exploded in the most wonderful way, like a garden coming into full blossom. And it was wonderful that the things that people said and the ideas that were contributed were just so helpful.
Yes, and it was fantastic to watch. And that's really like the theme that we hope to capture in both of our community sites, whether it's the Strong Towns Facebook group or the Strong Towns community site. Just kind of this basic understanding that, hey, like we're all in this together. Like Strong Towns doesn't understand like what's best for Thunder Bay. Sure, we have these principles, but we really think if we're going to build stronger places, it's going to be people like you, Cindy, who, you know, observe that, hey, something's wrong in my community. I'm just going to share this problem with others and see if we can try to find some next steps along the way.
Yeah. And even though people may not have even heard of Thunder Bay or knew anything about it, some of the things they suggested were fairly generic and could apply to almost any small city, or they actually took the time to look into Thunder Bay specifically. One fellow actually went on to the city's website and looked at the financial statements and said, well, I see this and I see this. It was quite astonishing. And like I say, it was extremely helpful for preparing the deputation.
Fantastic, Cindy. You mentioned earlier on in the podcast that, you know, from attending Chuck's presentations in the past, learning that our downtowns are our most financially productive places, that it makes sense that these are the places that we want to, you know, shower with love, the places that we want to maintain, because it's, of course, generating the most tax revenue for our local government. It sounds like from this council meeting that you attended, that's not what the conversation was about. Of course, you'd observe that the city wasn't really maintaining what it was built, more so as we've seen in many other communities. Its main focus was on building something new. In this example, the new indoor sports stadium. If I understand correctly, you chose to respond in this meeting by putting together some sort of presentation to kind of bring up these questions to the council. Is that correct?
That's right. I had read two articles that were Strongtown's articles, and one was called "The More We Grow, the Poorer We Become." And the other sort of came out of another article I read. It was like a hyperlink in an article I read, and I thought, what was that? And it took me to something called "The Most Important Planning Concept You've Never Heard Of." And it was about something called as-of-right zoning. And I read those two articles, and I don't know if you want me to go into what as-of-right zoning is during our podcast here, and I can later if you want me to. But I basically thought, you know, I think there are members of our city council who could benefit from these insights that I gained from reading these articles. And perhaps, even if it doesn't affect this particular budget, perhaps it's going to plant some seeds for future decision making. Now, to their credit, in the official plan that came out not that long ago, I think the city is moving in some decent directions, some good directions. But there's still a long way to go. And I'm thinking on what the city could focus on. And one thing we need to stop doing, obviously, is growing out onto the margins of the city. The subdivisions that we've created are sucking the resources. You know, they need the maintenance, they need the snow plowing, the salting in the winter, they need the road repairs and the road maintenance in the summer. And so we're sinking money into those. And meanwhile, like I said before, the downtown cores are failing a bit. So what can this city do? So my husband and I both, we put together a deputation that focused on, you know, stop the growth on the outside edges of the city, focus on the downtown cores, look at what we've already done well in this city and what we're already doing well, and build on that and continue with those things and get those things finished and done well. For instance, we have a fantastic waterfront development that started. It was supposed to move in several phases, and phase one was completed, and it has been marvelous. It has transformed the waterfront of this city, but it isn't moving along. You know, the other phases haven't been completed yet, and we're talking about other projects. So it's like, let's finish the good things we've started. Let's get those done, and then we can move on to something else, right?
And Cindy, we know that Thunder Bay is not alone in this predicament. Another city that Strongtowns writes often about is Lafayette, Louisiana. And like many communities down North America, you know, following World War II, the development pattern really shifted. It wasn't so much building these, you know, thick, tight neighborhoods near the core, making the best use of our existing infrastructure. You know, we were building, as you've seen in Thunder Bay, more towards the edge of town. And as we've seen in Lafayette, I don't know if it's gotten to this point in Thunder Bay. I hope not. But what we've seen in Lafayette is that they have a backlog of maintenance to the tune of $32 billion and a tax base of only $16 billion. So do the math, imagine continuing on that trajectory, and it's going to be tragic for the city of Lafayette. And this is the kind of thing that it sounds like you alluded to in your presentation to council, how, you know, we keep building on towards the edge of town, and you know, it makes sense. We empathize with that approach. Cities get a lot of immediate tax revenue, but as we've seen in Lafayette and other places, often this development pattern is not generating enough tax revenue to even maintain it. I'm curious, Cindy, as you were presenting these concepts to council, how did they respond? Did they see this vision that you and your husband were trying to share with them?
I think they were listening. Another part of it was also the road widening they've done lately. Now, I think that's tied into, I think in Canada, the provinces will give money, like municipalities can get money for certain projects. And I think widening roads might be one of them. And I've been watching these wide roading projects going on without any bicycle lanes, without any extra measures put in place to make the areas more pedestrian friendly. And I pointed out to them something that I took directly from Strongtowns, which was that when you widen a road and it's for the use by the same traffic, the same people, you know, you've got more maintenance now, but you've got the same tax base supporting that road. So it's not, you know, really in your best interest to be doing this when there's other things you could be doing that might be increasing revenues. And I think that they were listening, and we were questioned quite extensively during the a deputation. It took far longer than the 10 minutes that deputations are allotted because they wanted to ask questions, which is a good thing. And after the deputation, both the mayor and one of the councillors asked to meet with us like out in the hallway and invited us to sit on the bylaw review committee, which is happening. And that's another good thing I think our city's doing, is it's going to look at all the zoning regulations and the bylaws and do a major overhaul. And I think that's an opportunity to give some input and to get some of the Strong Towns messaging to the people on this committee, you know, in a way that will facilitate creating the conditions which will encourage investment in the right locations in our city. So I think that's one of the things that is really important. And I was really glad I'd read the article about as-of-right zoning, because that comes in now to this part of our conversation. Because in as-of-right zoning, one part of the concept is that you get the input during the time that you're creating the bylaws and the zoning regulations. You get the public input at that time. You say, look, here's this neighborhood. What kind of development would be cool here? What wouldn't be for the people who are living here? What do you think? Get all the public input, look at it, sift through it, make the decisions. Once the decisions are made, then in the future, when someone comes along and says, hey, I want to do this, you just look and you say, okay, does this meet what we said was okay in this neighborhood? And either yes, it does, or no, it doesn't. And if yes, it does, you don't at that point have to do, you know, an application for a rezoning or a special exemption and have all the opportunity for the unfortunate NIMBYism that can occur with every single So every single little thing someone wants to do doesn't run into roadblock after roadblock after roadblock and lots of red tape, which is a really hard thing, especially for smaller businesses and smaller developers who want to do something, because they don't have the resources to go through that. So, and that doesn't encourage the kind of development you want to see in your downtown core areas. So I think this zoning and bylaw review is a step in the right direction.
And it sounds like, since, you know, this conversation starts off with finding that shared vision with any new developments, if it is by right through the zoning, it sounds like because we have that shared vision, it's got to be a development that, you know, actually contributes to the neighborhood, as opposed to if we said, hey, in every neighborhood in Thunder Bay, we are going to permit huge leaps in development from, say, for example, single family homes to like 10-story apartment complexes. It sounds like that's not the conversation happening in Thunder Bay. Instead, it's, you know, if we have a homeowner who wants to create some more affordable housing, they want to invest in their neighborhood, and they want to turn that single family home into a duplex or to a fourplex, add some more housing without having to take on any, you know, tax subsidies or add any more public investments, they can do so. Is that correct?
Well, that's what you'd like to see, right? I mean, that you'd like to see that the ability for that to be there. And to be honest, I'm not even sure right now in every neighborhood, in every area, whether that kind of thing would be allowed. I know there was a small business that tried very hard, that had a huge battle because it was zoned in a certain, it was zoned commercial, but only for a very specific kind of commercial. And they tried to move more into a seated restaurant kind of deal, which was being well supported by the neighborhood and by the community. It was becoming a very popular eatery. But of course, that was increasing the parking around the area. And naturally, some neighbors in the area took issue with that. And this became a big battle over some parking spots. You know, at the same time, in the city's official plan, it was the type of business and the kind of thing you want to see happening in the neighborhoods. So they went through a very long battle to be able to have this business in this location. And that's the kind of thing I'd like to see made far easier for people that want to do that kind of development. In the long run, it went ahead, and it's been wonderful. And it hasn't been too much of a problem, partly because a little area beside the business, some angle parking was allowed on it, and it made it easier for everything. But you know, that's the kind of thing you don't want. You don't want a huge fuss every time somebody tries to make a small change, because you can't grow properly that way. And I think that in the Facebook group, if can we go back to that for just a minute? When I went into the Facebook group and I asked for suggestions, I got so much interesting stuff from that. Someone suggested they mentioned they'd done in their city a pavement index report with a 5-year maintenance plan and an abatement for second story housing in their high tax base downtown core area. So, you know, I thought of that. I thought, you know, and then several people, you know, they reiterated the importance of stopping the new development. And then someone explained this concept I'd never heard of. Dynamic concentration was what this person called it. And the idea was to focus all your resources in one key area first and deal with that one really important area that you want to fix or deal with in your city. And then you have all your resources available to deal with the next problem you want to tackle. And I thought that was a really interesting one too. And then there was a good discussion as to whether or not our city had confused assets with liabilities based on their financial statements, which is, you know, sometimes something that can happen when you look at numbers. And it was just astonishing. And I'd recommend anybody looking for advice or for good thoughts on how to proceed with something like this to definitely get involved in that group. One thing I loved about it was the respectful dialogue that went on. You know, you get into Facebook sometimes and somebody doesn't agree with something you've said, and it's like they're throwing rocks at you right away. It's like, what? So, but that wasn't going on. The dialogue was really respectful. The responses were very thoughtful and powerful. And it wasn't political at all. There was no, you know, oh, that's a lefty idea or that's too conservative. It was all very much, it seems like everybody, no matter their political stripe, is interested in having a strong downtown in their city. It just seems to make sense to everyone. So it wasn't, there was no animosity. And I love that about that Facebook group at the moment.
Cindy, I am so happy to hear that. And it's such a nice reminder about why as strong towns we believe that what we're trying to do here is truly a bottom-up revolution. Like, yes, if we like zoom out to 1,000 feet, it's really easy to politicize a lot of the types of conversations that we're discussing, especially when it comes to policy. But when we shrink down to, you know, the city level, the neighborhood level, the block level, and we start to have conversations like you and your peers were in the Strong Towns Facebook group, we find that exactly as you said, it crosses the political spectrum. We kind of find that shared goal and that shared interest for our communities. And it becomes so much easier to brainstorm next steps and small bets and low-cost, low-lift interventions to make our places stronger. We don't have to get caught up in, you know, too much of the politics of it because we have that shared intention for our community, which is fantastic.
Yeah, well, everybody wants the same things for their families and their kids pretty much. You know, it seems like a no-brainer that way.
Yeah. Cindy, I'm curious, you know, throughout this whole process, even thinking back to that original Facebook post you had where, you know, you had this excellent reflection and then finished the latter part of the post with, you know, do strong towns have like a 5-step guide or any kind of, you know, like prescribed way to address something like this, which I totally empathize with, Cindy, because whenever I first discovered strong towns, I had similar questions like this. I know every single time that Chuck makes a presentation and he shares, you know, scary stories like Lafayette, where you have deferred maintenance of $32 billion and a tax base of half of that, like really scary stories. And you're going to tell me that you don't have a solution to it. Like it totally makes sense to have that kind of response. I've done it myself. I'm curious what having these conversations with the peers in the Strong Towns Facebook group, better understanding how Strong Towns, you know, isn't prescriptive. And we understand that each community is unique and that the people that live in their community, you know, really have the best observations and the best ideas of the right approach. I'm curious what this process taught you about, you know, why Strong Towns doesn't have, you know, that top-down guide to whatever problem a community might be facing.
I actually have some thoughts on that. And I don't know if you'll agree with them, but I guess we'll find out in a second here. I was thinking, you know, how can Strong Towns avoid, this was in my head the other day, how is Strong Towns going to avoid the pitfall of becoming a movement that is looked back on as a trend instead of as a pivotal point in reimagining our urban spaces? And I think you've kind of hit on it there. If Strong Towns had a prescribed do this and then do this and then do this and then do this, like in the 70s when everybody was building covered malls and it was the thing to do, and then, you know, we built these covered malls, like we have one here in town, we don't know whether to tear it down, what to do with it because it's failed, like a lot of those covered malls have. And so if Strongtowns did have like a step-by-step, then we might find that it just became, okay, we're going to do this because this is the trend. And then 20, 30 years down the road, we'd see all the pitfalls of that because it would just be a carbon copy in every city, whether it matched that city's particular situation or not. And it would just become something that, oh yeah, that was that Strongtowns thing that was so popular back in the, you know, the 2020s or whatever. But I think that Strongtowns actually avoids that pitfall by not being prescriptive and by having some very generalized, I guess, guidelines or ideas that you can modify for your own city's situation. So I was actually reading the Strongtowns book, and when I finally got to place-oriented government, there was actually a really nice little comparison section, conventional priorities and Strongtowns priorities. And while it's not a prescription, it's certainly it kind of gives you a core guideline
sure.
as to
it's a philosophy, undoubtedly.
It's a philosophy. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it's like a philosophy, and so you can play with that. You can move that around. So for our city in particular, I think we really need to focus on finding the small things we can do right now, the small bets, as you call it. You know, get into the neighborhoods, hear the concerns, determine what the small things are that can be done, and do them. Because sometimes we have a real go big or go home mentality here, but that's not always the best approach.
Yes, Cindy, thinking about your initial question, you know, will Strongtowns just be, you know, a trend if we don't have that laminated master planned ebook to generate a lot of excitement? Will we just be forgotten? And honestly, this is a conversation that we have internally often. We hope that Strongtowns as an organization is eventually obsolete because the development pattern that we're advocating for is one that just becomes the norm. Like right now, we're seeing several great communities that are adopting this approach. I think about, you know, Fate, Texas, what they do with any new proposed development. They ensure that there's at least a 20-to-1 ratio of private investment to public investment. You know, that's a great example of, you know, a city having these Strongtowns-like conversations to make sure that new developments are going to generate enough revenue to take care of maintenance. Now, say we had a more prescriptive approach, like does it have to be 20-to-1 in every community? I don't know. Like I've never done consulting. Chuck did a little bit. It might be, you know, 30-to-1 some places based on their, you know, financial situation. It might be 15-to-1. We never want to get down to like 5-to-1 and 10-to-1, which we see some places. But what we've really learned throughout this process, Cindy, is that there's already people out there like doing this right. It might have been directly inspired by Strongtowns. It may have just been some great people doing the math and coming to similar conclusions that we have. What we're hoping, and you demonstrated this well through the Facebook post, is that we all just start sharing these insights with one another. And again, that goes back to why we have this bottom-up approach. You know, it's not going to be Strongtowns visiting every community, you know, trying to find that perfect mayor to lead the charge for a stronger place. It's going to be people like you, Cindy, who are attending these council meetings, asking those hard questions, and hopefully this changing the narrative as a whole about what success really looks like in a community. And as you alluded to, it's going to be, you know, for the most part, those small bets. You know, Strongtowns, we don't think there's a solution to this. We're more so in a predicament. How best do we respond to this predicament? And for the most part, it looks like, you know, as you said, what do we do? What's the small bet to make better use of this existing infrastructure? I'm curious for you, Cindy. I know you alluded to a few small bets earlier in the podcast. You mentioned the waterfront. Now that you've dug into Strongtowns a fair bit, got involved in these community sites, understood the value of small bets, what do you think a Strongtowns approach would look like for Thunder Bay? What are those next small bets that you'd like to see taken?
One thing came up at the same city council meeting. We've been trying to figure out a way to get cyclists safely from the north downtown core to the south downtown core, a north-south cycling corridor. I mean, we have a main street called Memorial Avenue. And for years, there's been a vision, and it's often referred to as the Memorial Link, of Memorial Avenue being a more pedestrian-friendly, cycle-friendly place and a more beautiful street, too. But it just never seems to really get going. And Memorial is certainly due for an upgrade. And there was supposed to be a bridge. There was going to be a bridge over a section. We also have rivers in our town, so we have bridges that need to be built and maintained. Where the bridge crosses the river on Memorial Avenue at a very busy, busy part of Memorial between the two downtown core areas in an area called Intercity. It's really not very pedestrian friendly. The sidewalk on the bridge is narrow, and cyclists feel pretty unsafe going over the bridge there. It just feels narrower, I think, because it's a bridge. I don't think the lane is actually any narrower, but it just gives you that feeling because there's no shoulder, there's no sidewalk to jump up on, right? So a lot of cyclists, they'll go around, they'll either get up on the sidewalk or they'll use a rail bridge, which is just down the river a little bit. They'll go down this dirt path behind a drugstore and over to and cross on this rail bridge, which, you know, is not really what you want people doing. Sure. Fortunately, it's not a frequently used track, but it is used daily. And so a bridge was proposed in that location, and everybody thought this was going to go ahead, and then it didn't go ahead, and then I don't know. So in lieu of that, Just Bike Thunder Bay proposed putting a contraflow cycling lane on the existing bridge for traffic and creating a lane there. And I think that's an example of a small bet that we could do. We could do that. We could put a contraflow cycling lane on the bridge on Memorial Avenue that would make cyclists feel safer, would keep them from going up on the sidewalk. Because if a cyclist does jump up to use the sidewalk, if there's a cyclist going over the bridge and a pedestrian coming along the bridge at the same time, it's not really wide enough for both of them, especially if it's someone with a stroller or somebody with, you know, a mobility assistant device. So you need something for the cyclists. And that would be a really great idea and a really good example of a small bet the city could just do. They could just put in this contraflow cycling lane and make that one spot just a little safer. And maybe that would grow beyond that into a proper north-south cycling route eventually. It doesn't have to happen all at once. You know, it can happen in small increments. So I think that those little things like that are really important. Just those small things. Finish the waterfront development. Get on with the second phase of the waterfront development. Get the parking lot finished. Get the space beside the hotel that was supposed to be a market space. Get that done. Say, okay, we're finished with this. We can move on to something else. Just those kinds of things would be so useful. And this committee, the bylaw review committee, is, like I said, that's of paramount importance. We've got to get that done.
It reminds me of a past episode of It's the Little Things. We had Nick Kittle on the podcast. And I don't recall his formal title. I think it's like local government innovator or something cool like that. He advocates for cities to do like dozens of pilots a year. And listeners, if you're unfamiliar with what a pilot is, this is comparable to what Cindy's been describing. It's just a small bet, something that you want to test out that you think might, you know, boost the financial resiliency or just the quality of life of your constituents. If it works, awesome. Let's build from that. If it doesn't, all good. It costs us maybe a couple thousand bucks. It's all good to scratch that. Do you think this could be something that could work in Thunder Bay? You know, instead of maybe putting all of our eggs in one basket to try to get this one proposed development, instead, what dozen, you know, pilots, what dozen small bets can we make happen right now and see what works out?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of room to do that, particularly in our south downtown core, where they're looking at what are they going to do with this mall, and we're currently in the public input phase of figuring out the answer to that. There's so many little things that could be done to make that downtown core better right now. Things as simple as getting the garbage picked up more often, or putting in a small public washroom that's available for people. It's just little things that if we just did those things, there's an underpass in the area, it goes under the railway tracks. People have complained about the safety of that underpass for decades, and they don't seem to be able to deal with that. Well, that shouldn't be something that takes this long to deal with. Just make that underpass safer. Just take the steps to do these small things and see what happens. You know, see what happens in the neighborhood as a result of doing one small thing. Maybe change one street from being bidirectional to one way. Maybe take two small streets in an area, make them both one way with angle parking instead of two ways with the parallel parking, and see what happens to the businesses and the walkability of that neighborhood. Does that change anything? It certainly did in the North Core. It really made a huge difference to have a couple of one-way streets here in the North Core. They're the two streets that have they've thrived the most in terms of entrepreneurial initiative and new small businesses and people walking around there and becoming a tourist draw. I think that's a really small thing a city could do, is just restricting restricting some streets to one way.
And Cindy, I imagine there's no shortage of ideas for future small bets. I think, as you've alluded to, it's just going to be a matter of shifting our focus. You know, I imagine if, you know, all of the city staff's brain power, resources, efforts are chasing just that next big project, we forget about the small things that we can do today. But if we shift that focus, walk those neighborhoods, see where people struggle, do the next small thing to address that struggle, as you said, I imagine we'll see great improvement in all of our neighborhoods, not only for the city's bottom line, but also the quality of life for our constituents, which of course is equally important in this process.
Hugely important, yeah.
Cindy, thank you. This has been so much fun. I'm honored to have met you. So glad that you joined the Strong Towns Facebook group. You've demonstrated so well really what this movement looks like. You know, let's trust our observations. Let's share what we've observed with our peers. Let's see what other successes others have had, where others have struggled, and use those insights to, you know, find the best approach for our own community. So I'm honored to have met you. Listeners, I hope Cindy's story has inspired you to trust your own observations. You know, whenever you hear that, you know, you have a lot more expenses than revenue, or you feel like a project just doesn't really seem right for the community, trust those observations, share them with your peers, whether it's in the Strong Towns community sites or, you know, just the local watering hole in your own community. And I think through those conversations, acknowledging next small bets, we can do a lot of great work to building stronger towns. Cindy, thank you. This has been fantastic. If any listeners want to connect with you, learn more about the great work you're doing, maybe connect with you on the community sites, where can people find you online?
Oh, thanks, Jacob. It has been fabulous talking to you too. And I'm just going to keep spreading the word because this is a great movement. If people want to connect with me, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on LinkedIn. Do you want me to say my email address online?
We'll probably just link to your profile on the community site.
Sure.
And that people can holler through there.
Okay, sounds good.
Perfect. Well, Cindy, thanks so much again. This was a lot of fun, and we will chat very soon.
All right, Jacob, thank you.
Thanks,
Cindy.
Have a great day. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.